Blog Talk Radio.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you got
smooth.
Drama.
Welcome to Smooth Drama with your host, Dick Hugger, a.k.a. F the M Word. I'm joined with my astonishingly incredible co-host, Miss 100%. We represent.
Why, thank you. That was a very nice introduction. Wow.
I'm trying. And tonight, we got my homegirl, HIV spokesperson, Yvette Ogletree. So if you want to holler at us, 646-929-2037 is the call-in number. Once again, you want to holler at us, 646-929-2037 is the call-in number. And, of course, I have another special guest also who is just going to give one extra shout-out real quick.
Elmo loves you.
And so, if you want to catch up with me and Miss 100%, you know, we're on Facebook, Twitter tag, my yearbook. But specifically, I know a lot of times y'all don't really want to talk to me. You want to talk to Miss 100%. Miss 100%, tell the people where they can catch you if they want to stalk you.
Hey, you know what? I love my listeners so much. I have an email address where you can email me directly. It's imnotonbs@yahoo.com. imnotonbs, as in I'm not on bullshit, @yahoo.com. That's it.
And speaking of not being on it, I'm not on it either. But you can email me, dickatsmoothdrama.com. On Facebook, I'm Dick Hugger. My yearbook tag, I'm Dick Hugger. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am Smooth Drama. Follow me or add me. I'll follow and add you back, as will Miss 100%. Because that's how we roll.
Yeah, that's how we get down. That's how we does it.
Speaking of how he does it, this first thing I saw, I just thought of you, and I didn't think of you, but I thought of you more than I didn't think of you. The Spice Girls. I know how much you love the Spice Girls. You got all the CDs, you got the T-shirt, you got the matching socks and wristbands and all that. The Spice Girls are coming out with a musical called Viva Forever.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I know how much you love the Spice Girls. Like I said, we can talk about the tattoo that you got on your shoulder. I mean, all Spice Girls.
A Spice Girl musical?
Yeah, seriously. Spice Girl musical.
Wow.
That's what it is.
I don't even know how that. I can't even imagine how that would even go. Yeah. I think they need to just let it rest, really.
Hey, the Spice Girls huge over in the UK. I don't know what you're talking about. You go over there and you get taken out.
Where are they having a musical? Where is the musical going to be held?
It's going to be over in the UK. And if it's successful, it may make its way over here.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah, I'm not. Because I thought I would pass out. And speaking of the UK, just in case you can't wait and you have to see the Spice Girls musical while you're over there, You can also check out Justin Bieber's Bieber Bacher Glory, which is an ice cream. Cost you only $32, an ice cream sundae.
You say what?
It's an ice cream sundae, which supposedly has the sweet taste of Bieber. Yeah.
The sweet taste? What the hell?
The sweet taste of Bieber.
What? Whoever made that need to go to jail. That don't sound right.
Well, it
tells you know how a 12-year-old boy tastes.
Well, it's supposedly marketing where it's going out the same time as the Bieber fragrance is going out. It's got fresh pears, vanilla ice cream, wild berries, lavender sprinkles, and edible glitter.
Wow.
Yeah. And all
lavender sprinkles and glitter.
Glitter.
So what they gonna do, trying to market him as a homo too?
No, that's is ice cream.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize for saying that.
It's okay.
But people who haven't been listening, we have been talking about how they're trying to make everything gay or homosexual in efforts to boost sales. So that's what I meant. Let me, you know.
Yeah, I know what you meant. I just saw it and I was like, the fresh fragrance of Bieber in the ice cream.
That's not right. That's not even right.
Exactly. And I know this the next thing. I know how much you love sperm banks and frequenting sperm banks. Well, it's mostly. That didn't come out right.
It really didn't.
And supposedly, they're supposed to be trying to establish North America's first elephant sperm bank.
Really?
Yeah, there's bureaucracy where the South African officials have to approve shipping frozen elephant semen to the United States.
And what are they going to do with it?
I guess they're going to inseminate some elephants.
We don't have enough elephants over here to inseminate other elephants.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking it's probably really hard to capture wild elephants. You know, it's the number one killer of people over there in Africa. So they probably looking at it like, why don't we just inseminate the elephants and have them have babies here, and we don't have to worry about catching them.
Wow.
I mean, I don't understand the whole sperm bank thing, myself, human or animal. I'm just like, just let them do it the old-fashioned way. But that's neither here nor there.
I think I'm going to leave that one alone. That's kind of...
Yeah, I'm just saying, I mean, elephants, I mean, so it's like whatever female elephant they have, she ain't going to have companionship. They not bringing in the male elephant to hang out. Is going to be the turkey baster.
Wow.
Yeah.
An incredibly large turkey baster.
See, that's the visual. That is the visual we were not trying to hear. But you went there.
Of course. That wouldn't be me, would I?
But I guess if we're going to go there, I guess we should go to Walmart also. You know, there's something about Walmart. You know, they say you can get anything there. And I've talked about it, how... You can go to a Walmart in different places, and it's almost like the club. You know, you go into Walmart, and people who go to y'all know what I'm talking about. Besides the pictures of Walmart, you see the folks in there. I mean, I've seen people in mini skirts and heels, and I'm like, is Walmart the place to be? I mean, is this the spot where it's happening? I mean, because there's this guy, Monroe, Louisiana, who was caught by the police because he's parking lot flashing. He's just driving around in the parking lot of Walmart, and when he got caught, he told the officers that, you know, I couldn't help it, and he wanted the women to admire his excitement for Walmart.
Let me get this straight. There's a guy who gets excited by the big blue letters on the Walmart sign, and he wants women to know how excited Walmart makes him.
Right. Yeah, he said Walmart aroused him.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I said. Wow.
Wow.
You can't get any worse than, I mean, and that's why I asked the question. I mean, because I go into Walmart, and you see it all the time. Like, I mean, they're in the club clothes in Walmart.
Well, for all the ladies that love Walmart and your men don't like to go to Walmart, hey, this guy in Louisiana, that's your guy. There you go.
Well,
he loves Walmart just as much as you, maybe more.
I think he's in jail right now.
Oh, he'll get out.
Yeah, he'll get out, and hey, if you're lucky, he'll be driving around, and y'all can all be aroused together.
Yeah, y'all can admire Walmart together.
I guess that's where it's at. And speaking of as where it's at, we're going to take our first break before we get Miss Ogletree on. This is Kayla, Where It's At.
Like, listen, baby, let me just, you know, talk to you for a second. Like, I'm just trying to say, like, listen, I'm not trying to nag you or pull you down or anything, but this is real life. Like, we really got to live. Like, it takes money to live, and if you're not going to get it, you know what I'm saying? I gotta go get it, you feel me? Like, sometimes I feel like I'm in this thing by myself, cause I can't even turn around and ask you for your help without you trying to say that I'm just digging on your wealth. Well, if that was the case, I would have been had better nails, cause all this cooking and cleaning, you got me washing machine, and I ain't never been the type of bitch to be on this scene. I'm used to diamonds and rings, I'm used to drowning in drinks, I'm used to beauty shop, crooked cops, and fraudulent things. Boy, I was harboring dreams, I was plotting a scheme, and I was about to make a way for us to all live our dreams. I'm talking mountains and skis, I'm talking all of them things, but you too busy trying to keep up out in them streets, while I'm steady trying to pull you out of them streets. Boy, you turn around debating, and then you battle with me. Boy, I'm just trying to tell you who them tattlers be, and who them tattlers be, and who them tattlers be. I'm trying to act like it's me, I'm trying to act like a theme, I'm trying to be the ride or die bitch you asked me to be. But are you joking with me? Nigga, you broke as can be, unless you doing magic. Boy, you hocus pocus to me, cause you ain't fucking with me. I'm the one that you need, I'm the bread making dinner, bacon razor of seeds. Who does it greater than me? There ain't no hater in me. And the more I think about it, boy, it's plainer to see that you ain't sheltering me. Now you ain't better than me. You just bring it out and balance out and level with me. You just failing with me. You just weathering me. I swear to God, sometimes I feel like I got the devil with me. I think it's easy to see that you're just not what I need. I think it's time for us to part and for me to take the lead. I think this whole operation would run better with me. Cause if I say tomorrow, nigga, then that's when it will be. Like, maybe we can live on dreams. And right now, we don't. Forever, that's what I always told you. I mean, I know I said I was gonna be here, you know, like forever, but I ain't know that I would have to make it mold you. I just don't wanna have to change you, you know what I'm saying, from who you are. Like, I guess nobody ever told you. I'd really hate to be the first to say it to you, but I'm just saying that you got to have money to make you like it takes in. of us to make it to the end. And as I hold you and console you, I really want to be here for you. Like, I really want to stay by your side. I know other powers control you. It's like, I don't know where your head is. Like, you only thinking about the money and cause that jewelry that they sold you. Like, I understand you trying to be fly and shit. You out here buying shit, but ain't worth the money that they sold. It's like our baby needs diapers and shit. So, nigga, what that tell you about yourself? Like,
maybe we can live on dreams. And right now, we don't have anything.
Somebody tell me where it's at. I guess that's at Walmart too. Or something like that. Anyway, we gonna bring Miss Ogletree here in the
Hello,
Miss Ogletree. Welcome to Smooth Drama. How you doing?
I am good. How are you?
Oh, we're good. No complaints.
That's great.
All right.
Thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for having me.
Well, I mean, I want to ask you, I got 1,000 questions to ask you. But first, the HIV, I know you came on, oh, you was on Oprah. Then you came out on Oprah. What spurred you on to do that?
Well, I was contacted by an organization that she contacted looking for people that wanted to tell their story, and they were really looking for women. They wanted to put a face on African-American women because they are the fastest-growing infection rate now, and so I was asked to be on the show, and I was really scared, but I said, you know, somebody's got to do it, and I wanted to educate people.
So as being on the show there, I mean, what's going on in your head? I mean, I know by the time you're doing it, you had already been a spokesperson and whatnot. When you talk about what you do as a spokesperson, what exactly do you do as far as educating people? How do you go about that?
Well, First of all, prior to Oprah, I had been to conferences, and most of those were HIV conferences, so people there expect you to talk about HIV, so that's okay. But millions and millions of people worldwide see Oprah, and so that was a whole different, you know, ballpark. But I started, I was uneducated, so I tested positive September 5th, 2003, and I didn't know anyone else who was HIV positive. And I was really uneducated, and I went through a lot of stuff because of that. And so being scared and uneducated, I knew I needed to learn, and I didn't want anyone to feel the way I felt. So I decided, you know, if I'm going to live, I'm going to continue to live, I want to help people. I don't want anyone to feel the way I felt. I mean, I was really devastated. So I just started taking classes and going to trainings. I went to any training I could so I could educate myself. And then just pass that knowledge on to, you know, my community.
Okay. Well, I know you not only did that in your community, you're also a member of the Kemet Coalition. You want to talk about what you do, the kind of work that you do in partnership with as a member of the Kemet Coalition?
Well, Kemet Coalition is a part of the state of California, and we are just the regional organization, and Kemet is really dedicated to educating providers, and so we want to educate providers of people of African descent who are HIV positive so that they're culturally sensitive when they're treating people of color. And so our mission really is just about educating providers on, you know, there are a lot of things in the African-American community that deal with history and trust issues. And a lot of times you don't see a doctor that looks like you, then you're not comfortable. And so we want providers to understand that in the Black community, if you only see white doctors, you may not be comfortable with that.
Right. Well, I think it probably go a little bit deeper than that when we talk about the Tuskegee experiments. You know, there's a long history of the African American community being taken advantage of by doctors. So I think part of it rolls into that. And I know, speaking of that, I know that you went over to the motherland and you were training nurses. And I wanted to ask you about that experience going over to Africa. I don't know, was that like your first time going over there, and how was that feeling when you got there?
And that was the greatest experience, probably one of the greatest experiences in my life. I have always wanted to go to Africa, and, you know, it wasn't something I planned. I just got a call, and somebody said, hey, we may need you to teach over there. Would you be willing to go? And so I really tried to be calm about it and, you know, act like I've been there, you know, and said, oh, yeah, that would be nice. And I got off that phone. I was screaming, and I was so excited, you know, and I just thought, this can't be happening because this has just been my life dream. And what's really funny is the man who asked me to go, he's the chief of the HIV, STD, and hepatitis branch here in San Diego County. He had heard me at a retreat, you know, and said, where would you want to go? And I said, oh, I want to teach in Africa. And so he was called by an organization in the United States that partners with Africa, and they needed somebody to go train over there. And so it was really good. I mean, I went there to learn their culture and do an adaptation to one of the Centers for Disease Control has a program here in the United States, and we wanted to adapt that program to the Ethiopian culture. And so I got to meet a lot of great people, and they really appreciated us, and I appreciated learning from them, so it was wonderful.
Ms. Ogletree, I have a question. It's more of a statement and a question. I noticed I was tested, and I noticed that going in and being able to even open my mouth and say I want to be tested was a struggle, just to even, it was, you know, fear from get-go. And even saying that, it was almost as if the person who I was talking to was just taken back. And this is a person who works in the healthcare field, and they, you know, they test people all the time. But mm-hmm. just saying it, it was, you know, it was, I just, it was a very cold feeling from the beginning of the process to the end of the process. It was like cold and unfeeling, and it was as if, you know, they were, I was coming in and, you know, going to the store and buying something. It was, there was no compassion. There was no, you know, it was just, and then I was set into a room for over 2 hours, and, you know, alone. And nobody came in to comfort me. Nobody came in to, you know, say, okay, well, we apologize. You know, this is what's happening. They didn't explain, you know, the process. They didn't explain what was going to happen at this point, and this point. It was just very cold, very unfeeling, very scary. What would you suggest that to other organizations or groups that they could do to make it more of a human experience? Because it's not that we're not human beings. We have feelings. You know, this is a very scary process for everybody that goes through it. So I'm just wondering, why is it that people are so cold and mean when they're dealing with something this, you know, this sensitive?
You know, I think, first of all, I think a lot of things are changing. But the one thing I know is that when I was diagnosed in a real country town in Texas where, you know, there's a church on every block, and that's great, but people in, you know, in that little town don't get HIV, just like we think people in church don't get HIV. So I know the problem there was there were no HIV specialists, and the doctors were cold to me. Another thing is people are judging. I know I never took a test. I wasn't even as brave as you to go and ask for a test. I was tested because I was in the hospital and just thought something was wrong. I didn't feel well, and they had done everything else. And so the last thing was, oh, well, why don't we give you an HIV test? I was like, I don't care. I just want to go home. I have 2 jobs and kids, and I, you know, I have things to do. And so I, you know, for me, it was that simple. It wasn't like it takes a brave person to go in and ask for a test. And what I've been fighting for now for the last 7 years is for doctors to understand if it should be an everyday test. And the problem is a lot of people are judging people. You know, even in the church, you go in the church and they say, oh, poor sister so-and-so has HIV. And the next question you get is, oh, how'd she get it? It doesn't matter how she got it. She's got it, and we need to learn to love everyone and stop judging people. And I think at doctors' offices where they're not compassionate or clinics, it's they're looking at, well, what were you doing to contract HIV? And all you have to do is have unprotected sex one time, and I'm sure a whole bunch of us have done that before. So, you know, I'm fighting to normalize the test. The Centers for Disease Control has set a mandate that HIV tests, you used to have to opt in to take an HIV test. Well, they're offered now. So at the regular doctor's appointment, they should be offered with every other test that you get, and you have to opt out now. And so, you know, that makes a difference. And, you know, it's just sad when people go through things like this because of that experience, you would probably not want to go back.
Exactly.
And, you know, that hurts you. And so, I mean, there are activists all over the United States and I'm sure all over the world that are fighting, you know, to just normalize the test because if you're not tested, if you're tested late, and I was tested late, I was tested really late. I was probably positive for 12 years prior to being tested. And the reason why is because I didn't fit their quote-unquote profile. You know, and the profile is somebody that's using IV drugs or somebody that's a prostitute. But really, there should be no profile. If you've had unprotected sex, if you've ever shared a needle even once, you're at risk. And that's what we need to test on.
Now, I know speaking on that, I know that you've done a couple of brochures, the Women Want It, which is used at UCSD, University of California, San Diego, and Yvette's Story, Building Partnerships for a Better Me. You want to talk about those books and what you wanted to accomplish by doing those?
Well, with the Women Wanted is a brochure, and it was targeting African-American women for research. And at the time, I worked for UCSD Medical Center, and I was a recruiter for African-American women. And like you spoke about earlier, Tuskegee is a big issue, and there's a lot of trust issues in the Black community because, and it's not just in Tuskegee, there's been a whole lot of incidences. And so what I wanted to put out there was a brochure that encouraged women and let them know that these things cannot happen again. And a lot of people don't know that. There are a lot of steps in place now where things like Tuskegee cannot happen. You know, there's informed consent. There are people through all steps of research now that are intervening and, you know, setting standards so things like that won't happen. But because of those issues, you can't change history. And, you know, but we want to make sure that medicines that are in research are tested on Black people if they're going to be used for Black people. And so if we're not in research, then the medication is not really made for us. And, you know, that was my job then. So definitely that was the Women Wanted brochure. I made it to UCSD and was picked up by Harvard, and they used it as well. With the other thing, it was an article, and it was just building partnerships with your doctor and making sure that you're a part of your health care. A lot of times we go to the doctor, and, you know, the doctor says, oh, take this and take that, or this is what's wrong with you. But you know your body better than anyone, and so for me, I come and tell my doctor what I want to do. Now, he has the degree, so, you know, we can negotiate, but it's my body. And so we talk about things, and I just make sure I'm educated on the medications and, you know, symptoms and things like that. So then we can talk about, you know, what we're going to do to take care of me. I don't just listen to what he says.
All right. Well, I know that the self-education is very, very important. Now, as someone with HIV yourself, do you find it you're more diligent in watching your diet? I mean, how does that go for you on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I love to eat, so that was a hard one. And I also cook, and I had a catering business, so that's a hard one. But no, I'm definitely aware of what I eat. One thing that people don't think about, you know, and some people that aren't educated about, I am the one with a compromised immune system. So there are times when people are scared of people with HIV, but we need to be scared of everybody else and their germs, because if you're not positive, your immune system's working well. Mine is not, so I have to be careful about what I do, you know, and what I eat. Luckily, I like a lot of fruits and vegetables, and I do cook. I don't eat out very often because I cook, and so, you know, I think that definitely helps. I eat junk food, and, you know, I do that too, but I definitely try to, you know, watch what I eat. It's more about making sure things are prepared well, and that's why I don't eat out very often. I prepare my own food and, you know, just making sure things are really clean.
Right. Now, I was reading some. There's in New York, Mayor Bloomberg, he's instituting a program where they're going to start sex education by the second semester this year, with sixth grade on. How do you feel about that? You think that that's a good measure, or you think it should be something even earlier than that?
Well, I always have said we need to be educating our children at home first. So that's definitely my belief. But we know that there are kids that aren't being educated, and maybe kids that don't have parents. And so as far as sex ed, I thought I took sex ed in sixth grade, but it didn't really teach me anything, obviously. I didn't, you know, a lot of times parents, I mean, depending on your culture, you know, a lot of parents aren't talking about sex. You know, I didn't. I told my daughters, I have two daughters, and I was telling them, they were in junior high, and I was just telling them they couldn't have a boyfriend until they were 30. And in my mind, I believe that. You know, I'm telling you, people that know me well will know that I said that. And I was like, okay, I told them they can't have a boyfriend until they're 30. They're cool, you know.
Yeah.
And it took me becoming positive to learn real quick, you better educate your kids. And so like I said, I think definitely we need to educate at home. I wasn't a person that was comfortable with talking to my girls about sex or, you know, and I had, luckily I had a good friend, and she, I said, okay, well, you know, Miss Charlotte, can you help me out? You know, can you tell them about stuff? And she was their babysitter, so she helped me out a little. But becoming positive, it straightened me out real quick. I knew that, no, I didn't want my kids having sex. Yes, I believe in abstinence, but I'm real. And kids are going to have sex no matter if they want to, whether we're preaching abstinence or not. So I think sixth grade is great, but I think it's more about what we're teaching them.
Right.
Because
that was my next question and comment, because I know when we had sex ed, it was basically they show this woman having a child with the biggest head in the world, and I guess that's supposed to stop us from being sexually curious. I mean, it grossed us out, but I was like, that's the extent of the sex education that we got. I mean,
yeah, until you have some sex and then you forget all about that little video. It's like, I mean, so,
the video, I mean, it's just you showing someone pregnant having a child, that's not education. And I think that goes to what you were saying. You're about educating, because I think sex ed is more than just showing someone pregnant.
Yeah, definitely. And I hear that a lot. Even other activists throughout the United States say things like, my mom told me not to get pregnant. You know, my mom said, you're going to get something, or you're going to catch this. You know, and I know there was slang words. My mother personally didn't tell me anything, you know, and I love her to death, but that wasn't something we talked about, you know. And so, I mean, I think that, yes, there are a lot of times we don't want to give somebody condoms, and we think we're encouraging sex. Condoms were freely available at my house. No, I don't want to know you're using them. But if you're going to have sex, I want you to use protection. And one big thing that we taught in Africa, and I'm bringing it back there, is because we as women, and I'm still a little, and I should be ashamed to say this, a little uncomfortable having condoms. That's not something I would just expect to be having in my purse. It's not something, but, you know, when I went to Africa, that was something I had to teach. And we taught something called what's in your pocketbook. And, you know, a woman has her cell phone to call for help. She has, you know, whatever, the things you have in your pocketbook, but women need to not be afraid to carry condoms, because stuff happens. You may not plan on having sex, but women, little girls, you know, and we as parents need to just be able to say, we don't want you to have sex. And in the school, you know, whatever they want to teach, if they want to teach you shouldn't have sex till you're married, or whatever they teach is fine. But just in case it happens to happen, you slip and fall and have sex, or whatever they want to say, there needs to be condoms available. And there's female condoms and male condoms. And not just available, we need to show them how to use them.
Yes, you know, exactly.
And that's what's important.
Now, I had a question about medications. A lot of people, because of, I guess, they're not educated, and maybe they're, you know, I guess the stigma attached to it, and they're, you know, afraid to ask questions or feel funny about asking questions. Why does it seem as if some people get help with medications, but others are basically left, you know, to hang, you know, they're hung out to dry? Is basically, I've seen some people where they're, you know, they're healthy and they're going on with their life, and other people, you know, they're just, their life is just going down the drain. They can't get housing. It's just they face so many hardships just because they have, you know, this disease. So what is there something that the public needs to know about, you know, the help, or where they can get the help, or the right kind of help?
Yeah, I would say the biggest funder of AIDS medications, it's federally funded. It's called ADAP, which stands for AIDS Drug Assistance Program, and it differs by state. So there are states, luckily I'm in the state of California, and we do not have a waiting list. Just last year I spoke at a conference about this exact subject because it was in Florida, and at the time Florida had a waiting list. And if you have a, if you're on a waiting list for life-saving medication, you could die on that waiting list. And so it's just unfortunate, and it's just about funding. I know when I was diagnosed in 2003, I took 23 pills a day. This was just 2003. I only take one, and I don't know what that costs. I have four different insurances right now. I only take one pill a day, but my one pill a day, that's 30 a month, costs $1,550 a month. So if I didn't have all those insurances, and I have insurances that cover the copay for the other insurance, I mean, because who has $1,550 a month to pay for 30 or 31 pills, you know? And so it just depends on the state you live in. Definitely go to the local health department. Local health departments in all states should have information on, you know, where they can go. There's plenty of websites. The Centers for Disease Control, and that should be CDC.gov, should have definitely have information on where you can go in your state. And then housing is another issue. Housing is an issue for people everywhere, especially in states like, you know, Florida, New York, California, where it's really expensive to live.
Don't even talk about Florida.
yeah, he has a personal vendetta against the people in Florida. He just, Florida rubs him the wrong way.
Okay, we'll skip Florida then. We'll say, you know, places that are expensive. Well, we live in expensive. I know I live in expensive. I don't know exactly where you guys live, but
yeah.
I know I live where it's very expensive. And,
yeah.
And there are some programs for people living with HIV. I think that there are programs, and so I think there is a lot of help, but housing is an issue everywhere. One of the best housing organizations, I would say, in it's international now, is called Housing Works, and they're based out of New York. They have offices in D.C., and I know they've gone internationally now, and they do a lot of work around housing. But at the same time, when we talk about stigma, you know, you might not want to go to just any apartment complex and let them know that you're HIV positive, because they may not accept you. Now, yes, that's discrimination. It's against the law, but how can you prove that it was the HIV? They could say you didn't make enough money or, you know, whatever. I mean, and so it is hard. Housing is a big issue. Medications are a big issue. And it's all about government funding. And, you know, all we can do is fight. I mean, I lobby in D.C. and Sacramento. And, you know, and there's a lot of activists doing that. We just got to keep working it and know that it's important. I think people have become complacent, you know, and I think when it was looked at as a gay disease, we had gay white men fighting for their rights, you know, and thank God they did that, because now we have medications, but we got to keep fighting too. And, you know, we have to fight for us. I mean, African Americans are getting hit bad. And we're dying, and we're not fighting, and so we've got to just step it up. And there are some that can't fight. I mean, and for those people, there are people like me and other activists that will do it for you, you know. And if people out there feel like, hey, I don't want to tell anybody, you don't have to. That's your right. You tell who you want to tell, but tell somebody so you can get help. You know,
yeah.
You don't have to put your business out there, but, you know, let somebody else speak their voice for you so you can get help.
Yes.
Well,
now, one last question for me. I'm not, you know, but going back to being in that little bitty room, and once I got the results, then, you know, it was a big sigh of relief. However, it was, the results were given, you know, he just stuck his head through the door and said, oh, you don't have any markers, you're fine. And that was it. And I said, wait, excuse me, can you come back here? What are you talking about, Mark? What do you know? And it was just so technical. Like, you know, he didn't, you know, deliver it as, you know, as good news or bad news. It was just very, very nonchalant. And even after I left, knowing that I didn't have it or anything like that. I was completely healthy. I was still afraid even after that because I'm like, okay, I still feel like I'm back where I started from because I'm no more educated than I was when I walked into this place. I, you know, just walking in that, you know, I would get some type of education. Somebody would actually talk with me, but it was nothing like that. So my question to you is, how are you so strong? Because I feel, you know, just felt like a wimp, you know, after that experience. But here you are. I didn't have it. And here you are, a person that has it. You're healthy. And you're beautiful. And you're going on with your life. You're making a strides. And you're such an encouragement. Like, where, how do you get that kind of strength to stand up and say, yes, I'm HIV positive, but this is how it is, and my life is not over. And like you said, some people can't fight out of fear, you know, and other things, and you're saying, listen, I will fight for you. That takes a very strong, bold woman to stand up and do that for other people. So I don't know that I could do something like that, but I want to know, how do you do it? Where do you draw your strength from to do that?
Well, I think at first I was a wimp too, so I'm just going to keep it real. I mean, I was really uneducated, so like I said, you were brave to go even ask for a test. I didn't know anything, so I was told, my first thought, honestly, was I'm going to die. I need to hurry up and get to work so I can make as much money for these kids that I have. I had two teenage daughters at the time because now I've ruined their lives and, you know, their mother's going to die and I need to, you know, it's my job to support them. And so I need to work until I die. So I had to really, and I was really sick when I was first diagnosed, so I had to really become educated. And I said, you know, as bad as I felt, and I know you could do it too, because you felt bad, and you're telling me now how you felt, and you don't want anybody else to feel that way. And I didn't either. I didn't want anybody else to get tested and not know anything. And, like, I got my education off the Internet. I mean, and I started going to some support groups a little later, but I didn't know anything at all. And then I felt like I want my daughters to be educated. You know, I have two beautiful daughters, and I wanted them to grow up as educated women. And the route I was going, you know, with them not having a boyfriend until 30, they'd have been HIV positive too. They wouldn't have known what sex was. I mean, and so they would have learned it on the streets. And so I just knew that, you know, it was important for me. If God was going to let me live or allow me to live, I was living for a reason, and I wanted to make a difference in the world. So I, you know, I don't know where it came from. I've even had people say, I don't believe you even told anybody. I don't either. But at this point, if it can help somebody, I don't care who doesn't like me. And you know, I really don't. I think that if I can change somebody's life for the better, you know, that's what makes me happy.
Well,
and if you don't accept me, you don't accept me, and that's okay.
Well, that's what I wanted to piggyback on, Miss 100%, because I wanted to tell you that a lot of people in these circumstances, they just shrivel up and go away. So for you to stand up and not only fight for yourself, but for others selflessly, it is to be commended. It's a beautiful thing.
Yes. You know, Dick, you know how you like comic books and, you know, the superhero thing. She's a real life superhero, I think.
Right. Yes.
You know, I mean, this is a story that, you know, the best author couldn't write. I mean, it's just a beautiful, wonderful thing, and
you guys don't make me cry.
Okay. Well, I want to.
There you go, see the baby.
Okay. I want to mention also that one of our bloggers, Pianki, wants to mention to you that you should start drinking alkaline water, and because it's not expensive and it would do you much good. Just wanted to pass that on.
Wow.
Thank you, Pianki. I hope I said that right. And also, you know, I can't let you go without, I got to ask you this, Miss 100%. You're going to settle this between me and Mrs. Ogletree here. I'm going to tell the story. Walk into the car. I'm walking I'm walking Miss Ogletree to her car so she can get her car and bring it back to where we were. She has on heels, and she switches from long heels to, quote-unquote, shorter heels so she can walk back. Now, settle this for me. Do you think that 1 inch shorter heels is more comfortable? I mean, is that getting comfortable? I'm thinking
definitely. I'm a person who loves her stilettos, and I'm a person who loves her pumps. And sometimes stilettos, they're not comfortable, but they look great and they make your legs look great. Mm-hmm. But once you those stilettos, 2-3 hours tops. But you change into maybe 1 or 2 inches shorter, and it's like a relief off of your calves, off of your, you know, the heel, the balls of your toes. So they are much comfortable once, even though they're heels or pumps, they're still more comfortable once, you know, the heel goes down a couple inches. So, yes.
See, I'm glad he asked a diva, because he had to wear a certain pair in the show, and then just walking to the car, you know, come on now.
When I think of changing shoes, I'm thinking you're going to put on some tennis shoes.
With a dress?
Just to walk, and then you could have switched back to you. But anyway, I'm...
No.
I just...
You should have asked a man to have somebody in your side.
No, but getting back to what, before we let you go, tell the people where they can catch up to you if they wanted some more information.
They can email me at yrochelles, and it's Y, and my middle name is Rochelle, and there's an S on the end. So yrochelles@aol.com. And let me know if you need a presentation, you just want to talk, you have a question, feel free to email me. You can put the show, if you heard me on the show first, or just that you have a question. I get a lot of emails, so definitely let me know that, you know, you heard me and you have a question, so I don't miss the email. And if we need to correspond further, I can, you can give me your number, I can call you. And so that's the best place, and you have that information, so like I'm sure they can get back in touch with the show in case they didn't get that.
Yeah, if you need to catch up to the elusive Mrs. Ogletree, feel free to hit me up at dickandsmoothdrama.com, and I will pass the info on.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was an honor to be on your show.
It was an honor to have you on the show. I mean, I feel great just for listening to you. So trust me, when I say you're a true inspiration, I'm sure I'm not the only African-American woman that feels that way. So thank you.
Thank you. And it takes all these brave women that inspire me to keep doing what I do.
All right. Yeah, she's all right. She's
all right. See, I've known you a long time, so you can say that. I'll be all right. I'll just get better. That just gives me the, you know, hey, I'm just all right. I'm going to have to work hard.
And give you that push to go to the next level.
Come on now. You
definitely.
Come on, y'all. You know I love you, girl. So,
we love you, too.
You take care, and definitely we're going to have you back. And if there's anything going on, you got any events or anything like that, feel free to hit us up, and we will definitely promote it and have you on to promote it.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. You take care.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
All right. That was my, well, I won't say long-time homegirl. I've known of her for a long time. But yeah, she's a great person, an inspirational, motivational, educational.
Yes.
I'll make sure I say that right. Educational speaker, Yvette Ogletree. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah.
Beautiful person, and I will see and talk to you soon. We're going to take a brief station identification break, and we'll be right back.
Together you got smooth drummer.
All right. As we say, we were being really, really brief. Don't have a lot of time, but there we do have to get into our dumbasses. You have a dumbass for us, Miss 100%.
Yes, a dumbass out of Seattle. There's a man in Seattle who attempted to siphon gasoline from a motorhome parked on the street. He actually got much more than he bargained for. The police arrived at the scene to find an ill man curled up next to the motorhome near spilled sewage. A police spokesperson said that the man admitted to trying to steal gasoline and plugged his hose into the motorhome sewage tank by mistake. The owner of the vehicle declined to press the charges, saying that it was the best laugh he'd ever had.
So on purpose, he got his golden shower.
You have to be an idiot.
That's top notch right there. That is top notch. And I will go on to another dumbass. A Dallas mother who's arrested for forcing her 6-year-old daughter to video her having group sex.
Wow.
Yeah. She was having group sex, and of course she's not identified to protect the identity of the child, but she's having group sex, and so she has her daughter with her cell phone recorded on
the phone. Oh my.
And what happens, the father, well, the guy she was living with, comes home, and she tells him what her mother had her do. And so he immediately called the police, and the police came through and took her and the child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is, I feel one of, I mean, you,
you have to applaud that young lady, because how many kids do you know would have been brave enough to even tell it or speak of it? You know?
Well, I think maybe is because she was naive also at 6. You know,
yes.
Young kids, they just say what they've done. And she may not have known that she was doing something, but that mother who, while she's in jail, she deserves to be punched in the face.
And the men need to be in jail, too, because they had to have known that the little girl was there recording it, and they continued to have sex with her, with the little girl watching.
Yeah, that's beyond revolting.
Disgusting.
Yes. I would say, what, you got your daughter here? And
you
just got to go because the daughter's there, much less she's recording,
right.
And you know she's recording.
Exactly.
That's beyond sick.
Yes.
So she's definitely in the dumbass Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe she should be forced to tongue kiss your dumbass.
After
he did his siphon.
Oh, well.
That would be poetic justice. Just bring them two together, and he has to siphon, and she has the kissing after every siphon.
Oh, well, I think I'm going to puke.
Yeah. Me too. Just talking about both of them make me want to puke. For two totally different reasons.
Exactly, yes.
I want to thank Miss Yvette Ogletree for coming on the show and enlightening us. Yeah, that was great. I want to thank my astonishing co-host, Miss 100%, for being just that. And thank all the listeners and the bloggers for listening in and adding in. And I'm Dick Hugger, a.k.a. After N-Word, for Smooth Drama. We out. Peace.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands
up. Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you've got
smooth
drama.